And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. It's great to have you with us here on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are rebroadcast on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time on a2zen.fm. And we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So it gives you an opportunity to listen to the program at your leisure whenever you want. You can download the interviews, listen to them, share them, send them on and so forth. We encourage you to do that. We also encourage you to check out our guests' websites that we have links to for each week's broadcast, because they all have something very important to share with you, and we want you to check out their information. We think that it's vital because of what they are really working to do, and that is to make a better world for all of us, for themselves as well as for everyone else. And it is a selfless endeavor that we're all about, but there's also a selfish aspect to it, because I want a better world. I'm not real thrilled with the world that we're living in right now, in as much as it could be better. We can improve this. And isn't that what every company on the planet is trying to do? Is they're always upgrading? Well, we need to upgrade civilization. And so we are encouraging you to check out our guests' websites and maybe get civilization 4.0 is what we need. I'm not even sure what version we're on, but I know that it's not 3.0. We need to work on that, and we're going to do that today on our program. We're going to talk about a wide and varied series of subjects with our guest, returning guest Donna Sebo. She is a talk show host in her own right, and an author as well of God's Kiss, and we are grateful to have her on the program. Donna, welcome back.
Well, it's a delight, Richard, to be able to communicate with you again. It's just wonderful. As you know, I'm just as much a fan of bringing as positive a picture to people as possible and making them aware of possibilities and opportunities in every level of knowledge that we possibly can access.
Well, I know that that we are both probably feeling the same as far as I mentioned, the way that civilization is today. And I often think, my gosh, we've been around for, whether you believe that we've only been around for 6,000 years or 6 million years, and especially if we've been around for 6 million, you would think, Donna, that we would have achieved a lot more. We would be so much further along as a civilization. But we've been kind of dragging our feet for a few millennia.
And a few other things, I think. You know, Richard, it's amazing to me when you study history, and I was just watching a program last night on the Forbidden City and the Chinese history, and they were absolutely, talk about a club of exclusivity in the Forbidden City, it was unparalleled, and the horrific things that they did to people to make sure that nobody else got into that Forbidden City actually just made your blood run cold.
Yeah.
However, you go through history, no matter what country of the world you're in. I don't care if it's Egypt, Africa, Australia, Europe, North America, South America, anywhere on this planet. Bet you even in Antarctica when it used to be green. With people, it seems like we go through these cycles where we might be considered primitive, let's just use that mediocre term. And then there's a few that get smarter and they say, let's try this, let's try that, let's try the other. And then people get to a point of maybe being fat and happy and sassy. And then there's a few that say, I want it, you can't have it. And then we go into maybe a cultural renaissance, whatever century you're in. And it happens in different places at different times. And then we have to have a big shakeup. And whether it's Mother Nature having a severe case of acid indigestion due to humanity's whatever, or humanity says, well, I don't know what it is, or the microbes, the invisible warriors, bring devastation and disease where millions are wiped out. You go through history and you see this over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
And there's a certain level of pessimism in that observation. And it's not specifically yours. It's just it's history. Mm-hmm. And you start asking yourself the question: is it even possible for us to upgrade to, as I said euphemistically, civilization 4.0? Because we don't seem to learn or want to learn or are unable to learn from history. And yet all of the civilizations that have been the quote unquote utopian societies are things of myths and legends.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And I love that. And one of the things that I really wanted to chat about today, and we've begun to touch on it, is that when you get into reading history, and I'll digress for just a moment. I was talking with a fellow back on the East Coast yesterday. He was former military, and he happened to be in a restaurant. He said he's so concerned about the young people today because they're not being taught history. And this is a gentleman that's in his 50s, and he said, I was looking at the material that kids and the family were reading, what's part of their homework, and he said it was books about the 1940s and on. He said, my goodness, where's the American history, just talking about America, that goes back to the 1600s, 1700s? Where is it? Why aren't they teaching it? Because you cannot just start at point A, like the 1940s, and say, gee whiz, we've got all of this that's evolved. He said there's so much more that goes ahead of that.
Yeah.
And we got into a conversation about that. And when we go into, for example, anything about Freemasonry,
mm-hmm.
well, you get into that subject, you're going back thousands of years into Egyptian history, and now they are making discoveries. There's a wonderful book called Black Genesis. For those in your audience that are listening, they really should get this book and read it, because they've got archaeological digs that they've discovered that show a civilization previous to what we've known about the Egyptian pharaohs that was a trade route. The city was vibrant. It was huge. It was occupied by thousands and thousands of people. It was sort of like a Silk Road for trade goods. And they've just recently discovered this, and they're discovering other things. And so here we have, for so many generations, looked at a certain aspect of Egypt, and we haven't been able to figure out certain things. Well, it's because there was a lot that went before it. And now they know there was a black people, and I use that term specifically,
mm-hmm.
black people, this tribe, that these people were wonderful. They just had this knowledge for their time, and they were before the pharaohs that we're aware of. And you go through that and you go, holy Christmas, look at how much history needs to be taken out of the history books because it's not correct.
Right. But
and it's amazing.
There's one of the challenges, though, and this kind of sort of digresses a little bit, in that the challenge is taking out what's not history and putting in what is. Well, you know the old rule, especially when it comes to conflict and war, the winners get to write the history, the losers don't.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so and the winners have usually destroyed the historical records and literature and art of the losers.
Absolutely.
For whatever,
and that's tragic.
Yeah,
yes.
And so then you run into that whole quagmire, if you will, of finding, if you can, primary source information to support this historic event that we talk about, and those are the struggles from a documentary aspect in terms of verifying did this or did this not happen. I think one of the things that I find so fascinating in my conversations with various guests, especially in particular Greg Braden, who shared with us some years ago about a find in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
This huge desert area was nothing more than a sheet of glass. And, of course, you know, then all kinds of questions start to come. Well, wait a minute. Why is this sheet of glass here? I mean, this was a pretty thick, you know, this was several feet thick. And of course, this used to be a riverbed, and it used to be sand. And of course, as we know, we get our glass, our windows and so forth from melting down sand into glass. Well,
very high temperature.
What temperature would cause this sand to become so molten that it would turn into glass? And again, they continue this process thinking, well, you know, primitive man is not going to have the technology to generate this kind of heat in this wide expanse to create this, which leads to the question, well, if it's not primitive man, then it must be some level of advanced civilization going back. And of course, they've been able to do some carbon dating, literally 10 to 15,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they have concluded that the only thing that could have caused that area of Pakistan to have become glass, and I'm leaving out a lot of information, but basically is that which is the equivalent to our modern day nuclear bomb.
Right.
Which signifies a technology that, how could they have that before us?
Mm-hmm. Well,
because we, as you just stated, we've been through this before.
Mm-hmm.
As many people are saying, that there are those who say, we've been through this before.
Oh, yes. And I find it so intriguing how individuals, and this is very common, I've done it myself, where we think we know what could have occurred, and then all of a sudden someone comes along and says, excuse me, did you notice that purple and green iridescent acorn hanging on XY tree in the middle of Honolulu?
Hmm.
And you go, no, I haven't heard about that. Well, guess what we found?
Yeah, exactly.
There's an oak tree that puts out purple and blue acorns with a touch of red. Those are good for you, but the ones that are pink and iridescent green aren't. I mean, it really, it's so amazing and so fascinating. And that reminds me of a comment that I came across regarding Tesla.
Oh,
who
yes.
Before he died, mm-hmm. was working on being able to use magnetic energy for vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And this man had just, he was a genius, but he had this phenomenal capability of mind where he would literally go into his altered state and enter into what I call the soup, the conscious mind soup. That is out there, that has recorded everything that's ever been anywhere, anytime, any place in this massive, massive universe of ours that we can't even begin to wrap our consciousness around.
Is there another name for that, the Akashic Records? Or is that something different?
No, I think that that could be used if you wanted to. But
okay.
To me, it's like a soup.
Okay.
I like to describe it as a soup. I call it a bouillabaisse, really.
Okay.
Because you have a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and we are a part, every single living thing, whether it's a mm-hmm. leaf on a tree, a human being, whatever, rock, it doesn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
We are a cell, a tiny little itsy-bitsy cell in this massive, massive body that I can't even begin to fathom.
Right,
I don't
right.
know that you can when it's infinite. And each and every aspect of that cell is important.
Right. Go ahead. Right. Go ahead and get back to. I didn't mean to interrupt your story about Tesla. I kind of jumped in there because I wanted to clarify
right.
that.
Well, he was working on this magnetic opportunity, and he said vehicles will be promoted by magnetism, and we won't need fuel, the oil, we won't need to use this, that, or the other. Well, his thinking is so far ahead. Now, we have the magnetic trains that mm-hmm. are in certain countries that run very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it so delightful when I can come across people that, whether I read about them and they've passed on, or they're even in today's world, where they have this capacity to dip into that cosmic soup. And I am so thrilled that in today's world that we're able to communicate about this. But at the same time, I have to chuckle because I find just as much fear. And it's almost like a controlling mechanism. People say, well, you can only go so far with something. No, there's no limit on the capability of invention.
Right.
There's no limit on being able to move forward. However, not a lot of people can look at a big picture of, let's say, something, and then come back down to the little bare bones, nitty-gritty, fine dots that have to be connected to make something really happen, and it takes some time to do that. But the mind is absolutely amazing, and I think that's one of the things, having been in the work of mind for most of my life, that I am just overjoyed to experience. And I find no matter who I talk to, no matter what culture they come from, everybody has a story to tell on one level or another, whether it's spirit visitations, whether it is precognitive dreams, whether it's being out of the body, a near-death experience. They might use different words to describe the same thing,
mm-hmm.
but this is so commonplace. I just think it's exciting when we can talk about this, when we go into cultures. And a lot of history relates to that. When you really get into various situations and conversations, you'll have people, say, like from the Second World War. There's a member of my husband's family one day that pulled me to the side, and he was one of two men that survived a battle in Italy. And the night before the battle was take place against the Germans, he was made aware that he was going to survive. And he was not the only one, but there was only he was going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And all the rest of the men were going to be killed. And that happened the next day. He and one other man made it through. And all of his life, and he's close to 90 now, all of his life he's wondered, why me? And why was I given the experience like this? And he's had experiences, I learned, of being out of his body. And in fact, when he was talking with me, he said, I got to stop because I'm getting these strange sensations. And what it was the Kundalini in him. His whole nervous system was empathizing with me, and it bothered him because to him that was like a trigger for an experience that he didn't want to have. So he stuffed it down. He stifled it. And I said, this isn't something you should be afraid of. And he said, I don't understand it. I don't like it. I don't want to experience it. And this was in World War II, so he was shown that he was going to survive. He was given specific information. He had an out-of-body experience. Sure enough, all of the men around him died.
Hmm.
And the one other man, I don't know about him, but this is something I hear from so many people. I hear stories about people that are from India, because I deal with people from around the world. And it doesn't make any difference where they are. They have these experiences that I feel are encompassing an aspect of what I call the cosmic soup. And it's amazing whether it is coming up with an invention, whether they're doing a reading for someone, whether it is just, you know, a conversation. You can be in a time warp.
Mm-hmm.
And all you don't, it's like you're frozen and you're in this time warp and you've got this scene that you're in that you're visualizing, you're seeing in front of you, what is happening? You can't move, and there you are in that time warp. I've known people that have gone through that. It's really fascinating stuff.
Very much so. And what is so interesting for me is the process that I've been going through, let's say, in this past 9 months of 2012, is the direction that some of these programs have taken me in terms of the information that I can't ignore anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've intentionally stayed away from ET and extraterrestrials and alien influences or interference with man and his progression down through history based upon some of these, for example, some of the History Channel programs in terms of the implications that otherworldly beings have been here and they've been given the name of God or what mm-hmm. have you in certain flowery language of the ancient wisdom teachings that implies that we are not alone, haven't been alone, and have been in contact with or contacted by these other beings. Now, I've stayed away from it because I didn't find it to be really relevant. But now, as we continue to move forward, and primarily because of some of the conversations I've had in the past few months, I can't ignore it because the implications, based upon some of the evidence that people, that even scientists are finding, mm-hmm. are that there is a gentleman said to me, he says, "I am a scientist." This is the gentleman speaking, and I cannot say that there is no missing link just because they haven't found it. However, mm-hmm. he says, back in, I think he said 1992, there was a prehistoric little girl found in the state of mummification.
Right.
Preserved. And I believe it was England that had found this, some English scientists that had found this girl, and they had done DNA testing on her. And they also done carbon dating and found that her body was thousands and 10 to 15,000 years old. And the DNA, and obviously you'd think, oh, well, she has to be one of our ancestors. Well, apparently there were not enough markers, if you will, of comparison between her DNA and modern man's DNA to say that she was one of our ancestors. In other words, there was no linkage. And it's like, wait a minute, that can't be because of everything that we've always been taught in science about the progression of the Homo sapien, Homo erectus, Homo whatever, you know, the process. So he basically, the scientist is telling me, he says, I can't say that just because they haven't found it, it doesn't exist. But based upon all of the other evidence that has been brought forth, it doesn't make sense that there is one. There is no missing link, basically, and that we were put here mm-hmm. by some other species. We were this planet was seeded with us.
Oh yes, and I've been very much aware of that for a long, long time. And if you think about it. And this is what I would relate it to. Look at what we human beings have done with animals. Mm. Look at what we've done. There are some dogs we may not be able to even trace back because we have manipulated so much for so long. We do know that there are certain links. But there are some breeds, the honest to goodness, don't know where they came from.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know where they came from. And look at what we have done in laboratories where we have altered DNA. Look at what we have done with grains.
Yeah, oh,
look
yeah.
at what mm-hmm. we are continuing to do. Now, we're not the only ones that did this. Corn, for example, would not just grow on its own. And for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, man has done this. And we like to think, gee, we're the first ones. We're not. When you go back, human beings have been a part of a process, and we're sort of a test market to a degree.
Yeah.
And what I compare it with is one of Gene Roddenberry's, who I consider just absolutely brilliant with Star Trek. But I loved the one show, and I'm sure those of you that are real Trekkies will remember this, where they are on a planet where the god Zeus and some of the other old gods
oh yes the great
in
gods
in their environment mm-hmm. and they go, wait a minute, you're just not you might be gods here and you may have this power, but I'm sorry, we don't need this anymore. We're different today. This isn't this isn't our shtick. We're just not going to go with this,
right?
And I often, whenever I watch those shows, even, you know, it's so many years ago, it's fun to watch the original ones because they were so creative. They did such a superb job with it. And even though it's taken off the air because the people in the studio said, oh, this is stupid, nobody's going to want it, blah, 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 it started something because Roddenberry was so astute that he hired physicists to work with him. I know because I interviewed one. And this young man, when I interviewed him, this was back in about 2002, 2003, and he had written a book about Richard Feinstein, who was a brilliant, brilliant man, and he was one of his proteges. And this guy wrote for Star Trek. And here you have these minds that most of us will never hear anything about that have no limitation. There isn't a teacher saying, sorry, you can't do this. Instead, these are people that are so brilliant, they look far past the limited thinking of bureaucrats and others that just can't get out of their brown paper bag of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
They go, excuse me, but we're in this world where anything is possible. And so they created scripts that were so far in advance of their time. When did Star Trek come out? In the 60s?
In the 60s.
Okay, so you think of that. Here we are in 2012. They have a unit that can scan the body, just like Bones had in Star Trek.
I remember.
Okay, and so they were doing all of this. And computers, tapping your chest, talking via this little item that's on a chest about as big as a quarter.
Uh-huh.
And being transported, being demolecularized, and then being reformatted.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Guess what? That's been done.
Yeah.
Now, it's not at that level, but here you had these minds back in the 60s, actually before that, who were saying, this is where we can go. But it's very difficult for the average person to be able to go with that flow. Well, look at what we're doing today. We have gone within a space of 10 years with cell phones to smartphones that are going to get even smaller, that are going to be utilized in ways that we're only beginning to comprehend.
I was watching a program the other day about the first moonwalk, and I believe his last name is Collins, was one of the astronauts. He actually ran the command module orbiting the moon. And he made the comment, this was fascinating, because this piece was done in, I think, 2010, 2011. He says, the technology that you have in your smartphone that you can hold in your hand, there is more technology in that than the technology that I had both hands on in the command module.
Right.
Orbiting the moon in 1969. So, yes, we have come a long way, including the pads now that, like, if you take a look at the primarily the next generation, because in the first series, they were pretty good size little clipboard kinds of things. They were pretty good size bulky things, but still the same concept where they were writing on them, they were doing stuff on them, they were moving things around, and now we have these pads that you can just do access all kinds of stuff on. So you're mm-hmm. right. It is absolutely amazing. But I find it interesting. There was an observation made by somebody, and we'll take a break here in just a moment. The observation was made that man has not created or discovered anything really new. All he's been doing for the last 40 years is innovating. In other words, mm-hmm. he's just been updating. Remember I mentioned at the beginning of the program about Civilization 4.0?
That's right.
And that's all we've been doing is updating. We've been upgrading, but we haven't discovered anything new.
And people still have the same cotton-picking problems they had 5 million years ago.
Hello. Yes. That's where the discoveries and the creativity are coming in. And I think that Roddenberry, I mean, he just was phenomenal in his thought processes. I think that when we talk about DNA, when we talk about this whole process of where we came from, I think one of my favorite, and I will have to go back to the next generation programs. My favorite one was where the captain, who is an an amateur archaeologist, if you will,
mm-hmm.
He is drawn into this search for these DNA fragments. And as they find them, they put them into one of those little pads, and the computer within it starts to construct and so forth. Once they get the final piece of the puzzle, they're down on the planet's surface, and when that final piece of the puzzle is locked in place, all of a sudden, this hologram of this creature
mm-hmm.
Comes to form. and says, by virtue of the fact that I am standing here speaking with you, you have discovered that you are all connected, that you are all part of one another, and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. Well, certain races are going, you've got to be kidding. The Klingons and the humans and the Romulans and on and on and on. There's no way. I mean, there was obviously some great resistance.
Absolutely.
And it was as if, again, they so missed the message
mm-hmm.
that we
mm-hmm.
are all interconnected. We all do affect one another. And we all, especially here now, as we are wrapping up this ninth month of 2012 and heading for the 12th month and the 21st day for a lot of people, we're all in this together. There is no place else to go. There is nothing else that we can do. I still can't wrap my brain around the concept of wanting to control and have power over another human being, yet a whole, let alone an entire nation. That whole concept just escapes me because I have enough trouble running my own life.
Well, it's an interesting factor of human personality. And the diversity is amazing, but there will always be those that will want to be in that positioning. And I find whenever anybody, and this is just my personal and professional self speaking, anytime you have a person, I don't care who they are, I don't care where their culture is or what they've got in the way of the background, that wants to manipulate and control others for the purpose of what they perceive as power and privilege, they don't realize that they're literally making themselves a prisoner in their own way. And they don't have the freedom. They are prisoners of their own making, and the side effect is that it causes a lot of tragedy for many people in the process. But it's almost as if this is a school. In fact, I think we are at a school where we're given the opportunities to be the best we can be as students, or we can end up being the nincompoops of the universe, whatever we are going to choose to be. But it's only when you're awake you can figure out whether you want to be a nincompoop or a genius.
Exactly, exactly.
And I have seen geniuses. I have met people that were street people. And when I would talk to them or I would listen to their story, I realized that there was genius inside of them. And actually, some of them were quite content being a street person. They really didn't want to be out of that. And someone might say, oh, you're mentally ill. I wonder. There are other people that do want to change, other
yeah.
people that do want to go for something else, and that's okay, too.
Yeah.
I think it's a touch of grace when we can reach a point where we can look at life and can say, regardless of a person's background, regardless of their gender, regardless of anything, if where they are is where they want to be, that's perfectly all right.
Yeah.
It's not necessary that they be anything other than who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having a conversation with someone yesterday who is homeless. And by the grace of some very gracious people in the universe, this individual has a roof over their head, and they have food, and they have some other things. But I found it interesting, as much as they want to change, they're going to have to be they have to let go of what they don't want. And many times people hang on to what they don't want,
mm-hmm.
like someone would the Hope Diamond. And they go, oh, I want the change, but I am so engaged in what isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't know how to disengage from what's not working to move on to something that they can become engaged in.
That's an interesting distinction, too.
There is a necessity of understanding it. Being mindful, being awake, means that you pay attention to who you are, to what is going on, and do you want the same script? It's a drama. We all have drama. We're all divas at one time or another, guys, gals. I mean, we all have our moments. And we have to say, do I want to continue to play this role that I have adopted that is mine?
Mm-hmm.
Let's use the word victim. I've been a victim. Life has been tough. everything stinks. You know how it goes with me? I always have bad luck. I'm sure you've heard people say that.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. So they sit there, and they're in their pity pot soup. And nobody around them necessarily is trying to keep them down, but they have become so identified with that image to disengage from it, to say, yeah, I don't think I want that anymore. I think I'm going to go and I'm going to move to Paris, France, and become an artist and become recognized for this. I mean, you could do whatever you want. I'm playing with the words.
Sure.
To get the drift. But this is something where all of a sudden when you disengage, you have freedom. And I shared a story that is a true story about a businessman on my show this morning. And this businessman had been very, very wealthy and had everything. Anything and everything you could ever want. He had so much money, you couldn't possibly spend it in a lifetime. But this man had an issue with himself. And he didn't have a good sense of self-worth. No matter what he did, no matter how he did it, didn't make any difference. He was sabotaging himself. And the long and short of it was, this man that had everything ends up destroying his marriage, ends up destroying his whole life because he became an alcoholic. He ends up living on the streets. Apparently, he lived on the streets for about 10 years. I mean, he was in the dregs. He saw the dirty, the dirtier, and the ugliest. That's the only way I know how to phrase it.
Mm-hmm.
One day, he's out in the garbage can looking for booze, and there is someone that calls his name. And he hadn't heard anybody call his name, his full formal name, for years. And I'll call him Harry. And they called out his name, Harry so-and-so, is that really you? Now, this, he hears this, he turns around, he looks at a guy, here's this guy in a business suit, everything, said, Harry, is that you? Well, he looks at this guy, he recognizes him, it was someone he had worked with for a long time. He didn't say anything to him, he walks past him, pushes him aside, and goes on his way. In that moment where this old working colleague recognized him, called out his name, something happened in his head. He said, it was like someone woke me up.
Mm.
And he awakened to a reality, and he suddenly looked at what he was in. Now, he'd been living this way for 10 years. You see, how come it didn't happen sooner? You never know.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to trigger a shift. You have no idea. It could be a word, it could be a smell, it could be anything. For him, it was hearing the name being called and seeing this old associate.
Yeah.
And he woke up and he said, I don't belong here.
Mm.
And that began a journey. It was about a 3-year journey. And he came out of it. He went back into business. He became very successful. He looked for his wife. He finds her. They ended up getting remarried because she had never married anyone else. He had been the love of her life. And they got back together, and it's almost like a Disney story, if you will.
Yeah.
But it was a real story. And he said, it was me. It didn't have anything to do with the money. It didn't have anything to do with prestige. It didn't have anything to do with anything but me.
Mm. Interesting. Well, I shared with you a brief experience that I have had recently with an individual. I won't say who this person is, but it was a challenge in that I don't care for conflicts. I just want things to go smoothly, and here's what's happening, and here's what's going to go on, and we do it, and then we move on to the next thing, and so forth. And there was a certain level of resistance, and I could have gone down a couple of different paths, and I thought, well, wait a minute, I'm an adult here, you know, and I can handle this as an adult with this person, and you know, and I'm not responsible for how this person reacts to it. That's not my role. My role is to be true to myself, to say this is what's happening, and you know, and let that person deal with it in whatever way they want, with no animosity on my part, no judgment. It's like, you know, I've got things to do. I don't have time. Again, I don't have time to run your life and fix you.
That's you know, right.
That's the kind of thing. We're going to take a quick break here. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Donna Sebo. We're going to give you her information on how to get a hold of her in just a moment. Stay with us. And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Donna Sebo is my guest, and you can go to DelphiInternational.com. We're linked to your website as well. You have one book out anyway that we talked with you about last time you were on the program called God's Kiss. Fascinating, mm-hmm. cute little book for kids and adults, or kids of all ages for that matter. I'm curious about your observations, Donna, in terms of what we're seeing these days, especially in the entertainment world. We've had on the program Brent Merchant, who is always looking for these conscious creative movies. And we've talked about how there have been a number of them that have come out in the last 30, 40, 50 years since they've been making movies, mm-hmm. and they become more and more prevalent. But in terms of even television programs as well as movies that seem to be addressing subjects that are not, to you and I, that's not science fiction. I think in terms of one television program called Touch, a young boy who doesn't speak, but he only communicates with numbers. Mm-hmm. And his father's trying to figure out how to communicate with him, how to maybe even get him to talk, and so on and so forth. But the program itself really revolves around the multiple stories that are independent of each other, only to the extent that at certain points they intersect, and it shows our interconnectedness to one another. Mm-hmm. Whether we ever find out who was responsible for putting that potted plant over here that I found this morning that brightened my day, that made a difference in my life, or not.
Mm-hmm. I think when we're awake, and I use that word deliberately, when we're awake, we're aware of this flow. And let me give you an example. I was in the post office. I love my post office. I get some of the best stories there. I'm standing at a little counter. This is a little one. This mm-hmm. reminds you of a country post office that you'd find out in the middle of Montana. Mm-hmm. You know the people. In fact, my husband says he's sure it's the only post office in the United States where you can go in and get hugs. And it's just wonderful. We know the staff. They're just great people, and they've been there for years. And they have this little area to the left of you when you walk in to stand in line to get your stamps, et cetera, at the counter, that you can take care of your packages, whatever you need to do. So I'd been at my post office box, and I pulled my material out, and I was going through it, getting rid of the junk mail. This lady walks in. This just happened yesterday. This lady walks in, and she said, oh, am I taking your place in line? I said, oh, for heaven's sake, they're hardly busy. Don't even worry about it. You just go ahead and get in line. I don't mind. And so she's chatting with me. And she said, oh, I just need a stamp. So this is just chatty, chatty stuff. Mm-hmm. And she holds up this envelope that's got the name of somebody on it. And I didn't pay any attention to the name on it. And she said, this is going to my mother. She's celebrating her 100th birthday.
Wow.
And I said, oh, my goodness. Now, her mother lives locally. So she's mailing this to her. I said, how exciting. She's going to be 100 years old this week. That is awesome. She said, yes, and she starts telling me about her mom. Her mother is a volunteer. She's very active. She's not in a wheelchair. She is involved in community groups. She has just this vibrant, vital personality. The next thing she says just blew me away. She said, in this envelope, in her birthday card, is a check for $31,000. I said, what?
Wow.
How many times do you have someone tell you there's a check for $31,000 inside of an envelope?
Yeah.
She said, the grandkids, she has a number of grandkids, decided they wanted to gift her something special. They all pooled money, and she has a bunch of them, I guess. They all pooled money, and they said, let's pay off her house. So her gift on her 100th birthday is the payment, the final payment on a mortgage of a home she's lived in for a good portion of her life. And here I am listening to this woman. I said, my goodness, I hope you have a camera somewhere handy when she looks at the check, because she's just going to be blown away. It's the last thing that she's expecting.
Yeah.
How exciting.
Yeah.
She said, yeah. These kids, and they're not young kids, like, you know, teenagers.
Sure, sure.
They're adults. But I said, the thoughtfulness of deciding to do something like this and all of them participating for their grandmother is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
So here's this story. I said, you made my day. She said, isn't it cool? And she's standing there. Like I said, then I don't know who she is. My husband said, oh, you should have found out who she was so you could interview her and blah, blah, blah. I said, that didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah.
And a gift was shared. And the synchronization, what are the odds of my being in a post office, talking to someone,
yeah,
having this experience, and her having a sense of trust with me, where she's saying, oh, I got a check for $31,000.
That is extraordinary. And that definitely goes to the synchronicity of the universe. There is no question about it.
That's right. I said, now, what a gift.
Now, one of the things that strikes me very interestingly about this story is because it makes me think of the connectedness that is spoken of in a book that I read. Oh, my gosh, it has to have been almost 20 years. I can't believe it's probably been almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield.
Yes.
Where he talks about how each one of us has a message, if you will, a piece of our puzzle. They have it.
Mm-hmm.
We can't get it unless we communicate with them, unless we interact with them, unless we, using the Star Trek metaphor, lower our shields at least long enough to mm-hmm. receive the message that they have for us and to exchange messages if we are to give our message to them. And we may not even know what that is. In your case, it may have just been being there and taking the story in, giving her the opportunity to share the excitement that she has with what she's doing for her mother.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? After that, I had to make a stop at a local bank that I work with, and I shared it with a teller that was waiting on me, and she's seen me before. And she said, oh, this is wonderful. What a fabulous story. I'm so glad you shared that with me. And I thought, what is so special about this is, someone might say, of the pessimistic neighbor, she's 100 years old and you're going to be worrying about her mortgage? You have got to be kidding.
Yeah.
Why would you give her $31,000? What a waste of money. You know, when she dies, she could die tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. No. There's so much to this in that there is love behind this money. There is a giving that the grandchildren are showing their love and their appreciation for her, and they want her to know that she doesn't have to worry,
yeah,
that she is cared for. And I thought, what a phenomenal gift to someone who has lived a century to have that gift of love. And knowing that she had an impact on her grandchildren,
yeah,
that she didn't have on her own children, because the daughter said to me, she had a number of kids, and none of them contributed towards this.
Oh.
It was all the grandkids. So you have this that shows her that her life has value. And it's not the money.
Yeah.
Even though that's what's being given.
Sure.
This is their way of saying, we love you, we want you to know that you're cared for,
yeah,
and we honor you as your grandchildren. And I think that gift in and of itself is just absolutely phenomenal. So I'm glad I had the opportunity to share the story with you and your listeners, because so many times, as you have brought out so very, very succinctly, there is that linkage. And I'll go back to the guy, Harry. You have to change your mind. Everything begins with a thought. If you have thoughts of disablement, disability, that you can't, nothing's ever going to go for you, you always have bad luck. If you get locked into that mentality, you're the only one that can unlock yourself. And it means that you have to take the key, which is you, your essence, put it in a lock, and turn the key so the door of opportunity will open.
Yeah.
It's not always easy. But now, somewhere, you've got to do that.
Yeah. I know that our life experiences, even going back to childhood, will have an impact on, I don't know that our ability to change, it's maybe not so much ability as much as it is maybe our capacity. We have the ability to change. It's always been there, but we haven't always had that. The capacity, the driving force, if you will, the impetus, the whatever the catalyst might be to make that change until, in the case of one of your earlier stories, until that one significant moment in time when that switch is flipped in the other direction by whatever it would be, and voila, and then off you go.
That's absolutely true.
And we can all take a look at our own lives. This is kind of funny in a way because I take issue with people, especially the documentary filmmakers or the History Channel programs that will be covering a particular portion of history, and then a particular event happens, and they say, and when this event happened, it changed the course of history. And the reason I take umbrage with that is because they're implying that they knew what the course of history was going to be and that this is what changed it. And I sit there going, well, how do you know this wasn't the course of history that was supposed to happen anyway? We don't know. Mm-hmm. So that phrase just seems to me so incongruous to the whole process. We already know what happened. We can't know if there is an alternate timeline, another dimension in that regard, where it went a different direction because we live here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's always struck me as very interesting that people will, basically say, yeah, well, that's what changed the course of my life. Well, I suppose that if one were to continue down the given path that they were on, I would say, okay, I would agree with you. That did change the course of your life based upon the fact that for 10 years you'd been doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, i.e. insanity. And suddenly, boom, you came out of that insane mental state and you went a different direction. But I keep being told by people, how do we know that wasn't supposed to happen? I mean, this all starts to go into the discussion of predestination and free will. That whole juxtaposition. And
well, I find in my work that I've been involved with, especially as a counselor, it intrigued me even when I began this work in my 20s, how I found that there were people that you could sit and you could literally read them like a book. Mm-hmm. And it's as if they came in with a program that said, this is A, this is B, this is C, and it's all going to end up D. And yet the majority of the people that I meet that come into my environment, they're not that way. And I think we seek out that which suits our level at a particular time. But most of the people that I find that come in to work with me in counseling and or in any of my classes, they have a different level of mentality, and they have a different program, if you will, that encases the opportunity and probability of choice. And often when I'm working with people like this, I'm finding that I can present different paradigms to them, and it opens up their thinking to different options and the reason why these options perhaps should be considered rather than just A plus B equaling eventually D.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely fascinating to me. That's the one thing about being involved in the work of mind, and I can say this with absolute sincerity. You are nowhere close to knowing what you think you know. And just when you think you have got something nailed down, I'll tell you, the universe comes along and says, hey, let me drop this in your lap today. And you go, excuse me, I really didn't want this. I joke with people and I say, frequently I'm in touch with the universal switchboard. They put me on hold constantly, and I really don't appreciate that. And I'm sure some of your listeners can relate to that, saying, boy, do you make sense. It is amazing to me, the versatility, the variables that can come in. Like I said, meeting this woman in a post office, her just being so open. I mean, in a million years, what are the likelihood of that?
Yeah.
Talking, having someone come into my path that has what I need, then I could no more have figured out how to do what I've been wanting to do for a certain amount of time. I've asked questions, I've pushed, I've done it, finally said, the heck with it. I can't figure this out. I'm going to go have a cup of tea. And then all of a sudden, maybe a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years later, bingo, there is that person that I was looking for at a certain time, and I pushed and I shoved and I spent a lot of money. And I'm talking to them on the phone for 5 minutes. There's a rapport. Oh, I can do this. I can do this. I have this. I go, good Lord, you mean I had to go through all this nonsense to get to this stuff? It is totally logical.
Well,
but yet it is logical.
Yeah. Well, I can relate to that because for, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years, I struggled while in Phoenix to get just a driver's license, even to just operate a moped. And they wouldn't give it to me. And I'm bicycling everywhere already. I certainly probably could have been on the medical review program through DMV to get a license with restrictions, blah, 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 blah. Nothing. Couldn't get anywhere. And finally, I got to the point that I think it was the age of 30, 32 years of age. I said, enough already. I'm done. You know what? If I'm bicycling at the age of 80, terrific. I'm thrilled because at least I'm still moving around.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still getting from point A to point B, which is the whole point of the thing. And I don't need that. In 1996, I received a lens implant that allowed me to get a driver's license, and I've been driving ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like technology finally caught up with me on the one hand, but somebody shared with me that it was like the universe doesn't like desperation any more than women like desperate men, okay?
Gotcha.
I'm sorry, we're not going to... I can smell the desperation from here. Not going to mm-hmm. happen. And as soon as I let it go and I said, you know what? I am happy the way that I am. As a matter of fact, mm-hmm. I had an experience I've shared on this program before where I was working with a group of religious folks who were doing a prayer program, and they wanted to lay hands on me to heal my vision, to restore my vision. And I declined. Because I said, my purpose in life is not to be healed. My purpose in life is to do the work that I'm doing. And, you know, some might be surprised at that and say, well, why would you turn that down? This is because the word they used was restore. My vision at birth was worse than it was at that moment. To restore it would be to take it backward. That was part of the reason. But again, the main focus was, my purpose in life isn't to be healed. Now, do I want healing when I get sick, when I break an arm, or, you know, sure I do. But is that really our purpose for existence?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe for some that is, to show that it can be done. You know, I can't argue that point, but for me, I just didn't, it didn't click with me. It didn't resonate with me. And so I had to respect, and I said, I can't stop you from praying for me. To which I had one gentleman that I shared this story with. He said, well, why would you want them to? I says, well, it wasn't a question of whether I did or didn't. It was in that moment where I was, that's just kind of what came out.
Mm-hmm.
But the synchronicities that happen in our lives are truly phenomenal. And sometimes if we can be awake, we can sit there in awe and watching it happen. And it's just, it is just so cool.
It really is. It is absolutely, magnificently wonderful.
Yeah.
When you watch it and you go, ooh, okay, this is super.
I like that. Yeah.
I like it. And I liked your comment about how it was 10 or 15 years. I remember when I brought out my first, my children's book, God's Kiss, and there was a book show of some kind in New York, and I went there. And there was a woman that walked up to me, and she was a very interesting character. And she looked at my material, and she listened to how the story came about, and she said, your stories are not for children of today. It's for children of the future, because I had encountered a tremendous amount of opposition with the title God's Kiss. And it interestingly came from the Christian community as well as other areas, and it has nothing to do with religion. It has a universal theme to it that is about love and children and every living thing in the world being kissed by snowflakes. That's how the story evolves, and it's just about love and beauty. People loved the story, but this woman said, this is for the children that have yet to be born. And I thought about all of the other stories that I had written and that I still have, and I've just been in studio recently recording them, and her words came back to me. And that was a number of years ago. My book came out in the 90s, and thousands have gone around the world, but there has been this very quiet period. Well, in this period, technology has changed. We now have the opportunity to put up e-books. We have downloads that were not possible when I came out with my material. And so it's a whole different world. And I've got the recorded books of the new ones, The Magic Hat, Joey, The Woodcutter and the Tree. All of these are coming out. And it's a different world. And what she said was very, very correct. A number of the stories that I wrote so many years ago really fit this new generation that is coming in. Not that adults would enjoy it, because they do. And I just find it so intriguing. So there often is a rhyme, rhythm, and reason that sometimes we encounter obstacles. Doesn't mean we have to like it, believe me. There's lots of times, like I said, I've put in severe notifications to the complaint department. And it's as if, again, someone says, oh, it's her, she's calling again, what do I do? Put her on hold. That's what we'll do. Just put her on hold.
Just put her on hold.
And so I'm put on hold, and I had something today that happened that took me off of the hold button. I was disconnected, but I found that the reason that I was able to disconnect is because there was a door that was open for me.
Mm.
I could take down my my 5-year connection that I've had to the universal switchboard and say, okay, I got it. And disconnect so I can get about the business of getting things done. And I say that chuckling because I totally understand where people feel that they are being held back or something's not working. But sometimes people, just like Gene Roddenberry, was so far ahead of his time.
Yeah.
So far ahead of his time. And the people that worked with him, their imaginations, the visions that they had, so far ahead of their time that now we don't, you know, the generation today doesn't think anything about it.
Yeah.
It's it. By God, how come we're not there? How come we're not traveling to Mars? And yet you'll hear another generation say, well, why go to Mars? You can't even take care of what's down here. What's up at Mars? The reality is that there is this need for expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And we have reached a point, coming full circle with your 4.0 level of humanity, we are coming into an awareness that it's up to us. We do have to wake up. It's up to us to understand that a lot of the petty attitudes, a lot of the old modalities, they are like old girdles.
Yeah.
They don't fit.
Yeah.
And they're damned uncomfortable, and they create more problems than benefits. So that's really a very important positioning to be in.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, those that are awake have a chance to move forward. And I'll tell you, from the interviews I've done on my show, there are a lot of good people doing exactly that. They may not be in People magazine. They may not be in any great big hoo-ha somewhere that gets all kinds of publicity. But I guarantee you, they're out doing.
Yeah.
They are making a difference. And it's a joy to me to know that, to see that, to be aware of it. And the American dream is not dead. It is so alive and so pulsating. But we have to change our understanding of things, and that's the painful part, because that causes a what I call a cycle of grieving, because you're having to let go what was an established okay, and that always causes adjustment, and technology is forcing that.
Yeah, very much so. I know that there are those who refer to this period in which we're going through as the birthing pangs, and there's pain. There's frustration. There's
absolutely.
I mean, I suppose on the one hand, I'm thankful that I've never given birth to a child.
Grateful, buddy. That's not fun. It's hard work. But, and trust me, you don't want the expanded waistline and all this other stuff that goes along with it. Believe me.
But these are the things that you understand and can relate to, this is the way it's been expressed. And that at the end of it all, when the child is born, there is a great sense of relief, a sigh, and tears of joy that, it's here now. And now is this new life and this new way of living and these new choices. And that's one of the other aspects, is that we have to make new choices. No more of the old choices for the challenges that we're facing today, because that's how we got here in the first place. It's time to do something brand new. Where can people hear your radio program?
Well, I am on the internet. I'm into my 11th year with my show and my 6th year on the internet. It's at bbsradio.com. That's boyboysamradio.com, station number 1. It's the Donna Sebo Show. It's on Monday through Friday from 9 until 10 in the morning Pacific time. And I interview people from around the world. And I have a very eclectic show. I have people, like I interviewed today, that are specialists in spooks. And I have people that are just wonderful health experts, just anything and everything that you could imagine I like to chat about. Because I think when we're informed, then we are able to make better choices. So whether it's medicine, whether it's nutrition, whether it is architecture, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
To me, it's all interesting, and it all contributes to the better good of the world.
Indeed. And that's what we're all about here on Tell Me Your Story. You can get a hold of Donna Sebo through DelphiInternational.com. We are linked to her website, so you can just go to Donna Sebo on the radio show's page following this interview, and you can connect with her, her books, her emails, her newsletters, her courses, classes, et cetera, et cetera. Donna, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Oh, it has been a delight. You'd never know that we were born to gab, Richard.
Never able to figure that one out. Not at all. I want to let our listeners know also that if you're listening to the radio broadcast, there's more of this interview, that you will hear more of it on A2Zen.fm, and that will be on Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific time. If you're listening to the A2Zen.fm program, there's more to the interview. You'll have to go to RichardDugan.com, the radio show's page, to hear it. We hope that you will join us every Saturday for Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday, love to Lal.